Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Rethink Podcast, where we're just taking a look at our lives and laying them beside, you know, what Jesus says is right and true, and then just rethinking things in light of what's now possible for us as men, as husbands, as leaders, as fathers. And today, I got to tell you, it's to me, it's like Christmas. I discovered this guest today several months ago, and then Dr. Larissa, I stalked you basically. So I think I'm on a watch list now. So I apologize for that. But I started looking at some of the things you've written and since some of the messages that you've given and your bio. If I went through your bio, we would run out of time. I mean, just the influence you have had in the worldwide church. But you have you and I share a passion, and that is to see men step into that biblical spiritual masculinity and image God to their wives, to their children, especially maybe some of those who that's not their heritage.
And maybe
that's where we'll start, you're going to be new to a lot of my audience. And then some of my audience are going, I can't believe you had, but kind of like, Tell us about that history that brought you to the point in your life right now in ministry and life and marriage and grandparenthood and all that.
I want to backdoor that a little bit though, Jim. Just I want to make an observation and then I plug that into the gift that God gave me and my background. Every child is born with two broad categories of emotional need. Now they got more than two emotional needs, but two broad categories. The need for touch and tenderness and affirmation and nurture and warmth. And that's a role not exclusively, but primarily of the mother. But paradoxically, every child is also born with the need for daily doses of discipline and denial and accountability and direction and this kind of thing. And that's a role not exclusively, but primarily of the father. Okay. And men serve, whether we want to embrace it or not, God has made us to serve as a portrait of where things need to be in a time that we can't see and to give the framework and boundaries for that. And so, I couldn't be more overjoyed in this conversation here because I think it's the essence of the moment that we're living in right now. It's a need of the hour that we're living in right now. Yeah. Now, my background, I'm profoundly grateful to God for what he's done in my life. My great-grandfather, his name was Peter. He was a slave. And so people say, don't you mean your great-great-grandfather? No, it's my great-granddad. My dad was the youngest boy of 14 kids. And my father was born February 13th, 1914. And so it was his grandfather. And so my dad, Peter lived to be an old man. And my dad remembered Peter. He said he used to sing and pray and rock back and forth in the old homestead there in Conover, North Carolina. Peter was illiterate, couldn't read, couldn't write. But as the family lore goes, Peter had memorized huge portions of scripture. And this is what he used to do. He used to make his children and grandchildren read them favorite passages of scripture over and over and over and over again. Oh, and the old boy had committed them to memory. And, the remarkable thing about Peter is that we have no record of his mother or his father, and we don't know where that is. Now we know the family that owned him, and yet Peter somehow surrendered his heart and life to Jesus, and because of that, he triggered generations of strong men in my family who loved the Lord. My grandfather Milton gave the land for the Thomas Chapel AME Church to be built on there in North Carolina. My uncles, my dad had six brothers. There were seven girls and seven boys, and many of whom just made tremendous impact. And my dad, he was no community leader, no outstanding, elected official or businessman, anything like that. But he was a man of impeccable integrity. A man that showed up and deeply imprinted my life. And so that's kind of the background that I came from.
So you made a statement earlier, and I remember hearing you speak on this earlier. and maybe your great grandfather had this, whether he had the language around it or not, but definitely you carry it. And that is, he was preparing his family for an unknown future.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. Can you kind of unpack that a little bit? Because yeah. as parents, it's the same, right? That's our job.
Yeah. That is our job. You know, and the deal is, Jim, you know this. I mean, everybody's going to leave a legacy. It's irrelevant right. to say, I don't want to leave a legacy. I mean, that's out of yeah. your hands. You know, right. If right. you're breathing, you're going to leave one. The question right. is what kind? And yeah. the question is intentionality. And, you know, it's just remarkable when you think about the time that my great-grandfather and my grandfather and even my dad grew up. You know, things were stacked against them in the South. Right. And they're not only, you know, swimming upstreams, you got piranha coming at them. And yeah, right. And yet at the same time, you know, there was a sense of togetherness there. And in my family, there's a sense of, hey, look, you know, I'm passing on to this next generation, perhaps opportunities, giving them what they need to greet the opportunities that we didn't have. And so there was this sense in my dad, my grandparents, there was this sense of, hey, look, I'm working hard so I can be this. I can be the floor upon which you stand and not the ceiling that will restrict you.
Oh, that's good.
And, you know, my dad would get on my case, for example, when we were growing up. If he thought I was mailing it in or not doing all that I could do, he would sit down and give me the talk. And he would do that with my sisters, too. He said, I just need to tell you something. You have far more opportunities than I ever had. And then your father, your grandfather had, and your great grandfather had. You just can't spit this stuff away, boy. Mm. What's been placed in your hands is a stewardship. So you got to do something with it. And so in that sense, they lived for a time that they could not see. Mm. And they understood the full bore impact of their lives could not be measured at any given moment in history. And wow. yet it was still waiting. So,
yeah. So let's talk about that legacy just a little bit. Right. Yeah. So I deal with a lot of men who don't have that legacy. Like my dad, I was raised in a church. I lived in the parsonage. I mean, I'm a church kid. Right. And so he wasn't perfect. And I don't think your dad is. Really, I have a lot of men who going, I wasn't handed that legacy. I don't even know how to do this. Like how do you, as you've worked with men over the years and men who are coming out of maybe brokenness, or they were handed a legacy of dysfunction or even abuse, or just dad, there wasn't a dad. You know, I believe fatherlessness is probably the one of the biggest epidemics in our, right? I always preach, if I could just get men to figure their crap out, most of the problems that fall on women and children just go away. All right. Not totally. Women are, they carry their load as well, but how does a man, maybe he's put his eyes on Jesus now, but he still doesn't know how to be a husband or a father because it wasn't modeled for him.
Yeah.
Like where do you start coaching that man?
And that's huge, right? Because what has been modeled before us, you know, it either will propel us or imprison us. And so, that's a big deal. Now, having said that, I'm going to say something here that this is not culturally PC what I'm going to say right now.
That's my specialty. Go ahead.
I think what has happened to us is that we so have identified with our struggles and our deficits and being in touch with all of that, that it's prohibited us from being what we need to be.
Okay.
Time is ruthless. The clock and calendar, they're ruthless.
Yes.
You don't control either one of them. And, you know, when you're born, you look like your parents, but when you die, you look like your decisions. You look like your choices. You look like those things. And there comes a critical point in all of our lives, particularly as men, where you know your past may explain you, but it doesn't excuse you. You have to embrace the reality that I am becoming, for good or bad, my decisions and my responses and my reactions. I'm becoming that. Mm-hmm. And even though I couldn't control the mess and garbage and crap that's been dumped on me and the pain, and it's real, I've got to figure out a way. Yeah. How do I own my choices? How do I own my decisions? How do I own my responses?
From now on.
From now on. Because
that's all we have.
That's right. The fetal position is not an option. I mean, that's right. That's just not an option. After a while, the cement hardens around that. Mm. And so you got to decide. I mean, it's like, you know, the deal is this. It starts somewhere, right? My great-grandfather, I don't, you know, again, we don't know anything about him. I mean, he was a slave. And this that wasn't an idyllic, you know, time.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And somewhere along the line, he said,
yes,
I believe in Jesus, and I believe that he can change me, and I believe that he can do something in this family. All I have is right now. The pain of yesterday, yeah, that lingers around, but it's gone, and I'm living in the moment. So I think it begins by decision, by choice. Now, I think the second thing that you have to do is, well, you got to decide, and then you have to take the initiative. I've got to be proactive about getting what I need, and not just, you know, you can be so tied up with grieving your losses that you can't greet your future.
That's good.
And so I have to say to myself, hey, look, okay, I didn't have a dad, or I had a dad that beat the crap out of me, man. I've been through all of this stuff. Well, what am I going to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I need to be fathered. All right. Are there dudes in my church? I'm a new Christian. I don't understand all this stuff, you know, and everything. But I know that Pastor Jim and others there, there's some people in the church and some folks around. I've admired them from a distance. I've got to slay my pride, push that aside, and start getting what I need. Because the truth of the matter is, there's no such thing as an independent human being.
That's
are always, always impacting people around us.
That's right.
We're interconnected even when we pursue isolation.
Mm.
And it tells the truth. And it's going to tell the truth about us. And so this is an urgent matter. And I think at a certain point, you got to say, hey, look, okay. You see, all change in life is lived at the verb position, right? It's always lived at the verb position.
Yes.
But what I mean, it's not just thinking right. At a certain point, it is acting right.
Acting right, yeah. Yeah.
And forcing myself to do that. So, yeah, you know.
So, go back to that. So you've made a statement. I'm a stalker, remember? You made a statement. I have to stick around long enough to get what I need.
Yeah.
So that I can get what I want. And
that's exactly right.
And I feel like men, but even in parenting, I see like if it gets too hard and I don't get what I want, we just tap out.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so talk about, first of all, you know, you have to stick around to get what you need to get what you want. And then how does that play out in parenting? Because again, I deal with a lot of parents and a lot of, I was a youth pastor for 22 years and I see like, hey, I don't like it anymore. So I quit. And I'm like, wait till you get married, you know, because you're setting things in motion now. Right. And you've got to tell the painting story about one day this boy. Okay. That's my deal. All right. Let's just talk about sticking around to get long enough to get what you need. All right. And down the road is what you want. Talk about that.
Operating from gifts, talents, and abilities and your desires will inject superficiality in your life.
Okay.
Now, let me explain what I mean by that.
Okay.
They're just great paradoxes in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the path to freedom is sacrifice.
Yes.
You can't be free without sacrifice.
That's right.
It's a form of self-destruction. If there's not boundaries and sacrifices, and the most positive word in the English language, sooner or later, you have to realize is the word no.
Buddy, I've quoted you in a sermon on that one. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's not sloganish. That's just reality.
Yes.
And so I tell younger leaders all the time, listen, you got to put your seatbelt on and fight your way through an endurance ride. Because on your way to doing something, you have to become something. Mm-hmm. And if your platform, all your character always has to be greater than the platform that you stand on.
Mm.
That's your aspiration. Or else visibility and success will kill you.
Absolutely.
It will absolutely kill you because you can't handle it.
That's right.
And so when I say, you know, it's your character that wins today. It's who you are that wins today. But guess what? You can't develop integrity. You can't develop character. And you really can't develop convictions unless you're tested.
Mm-hmm.
That it just doesn't happen. All you have is slogans and thoughts, and you're quoting other people, and you're superficial. So mm-hmm. you always have to have more on underneath the counter than you put on display. And the reality is, if you're going to be a person that becomes, if you're going to be I'm going to use a word here. If you're going to be a person that becomes noble, that's a wonderful word.
It's a good word.
And by noble, what I mean is that which is always refreshingly right. Mm. It was right 2,000 years ago. It's going to be right. And you know the difference between a trend and a fad, you know? And your life is not just wrapped up in the next sharp-looking thing.
Yeah.
And you bring substance to your moment in history. I mean, it's like Daniel. You know, Dan, they look at him and say, ooh, where did that dude come from? What I mean, there is something to this guy. But he weathered the storms, and his life became defined by that which is enduring. And there are values there. You know, and I mean, a couple of quick stories. There was a young guy. I was on staff with Campus Crusade for Christ for 27 years. I was in leadership there. And there was a young guy that I was really, really impressed with. And I was over a division there. He didn't report directly to me. And he, a very strong, visible platform presence, very articulate, a lot of just public gifting, very charismatic and this kind of thing. But I began to notice something as I watched him through the years. Whenever things got hard or a little difficult or he had to press into something, all of a sudden, God was leading him to change, you know? And so in a large organization, you know, you can hide. And so he would transfer from the division. Excuse me. Well, I knew I picked up that he was going to make another change. I called in my office and I said, you know, I hear you want to change again. And then I ventured to say to him, can I talk to you like I would one of my sons? Would you give me that permission, please? And he said, sure. And he just went on to say, so I said, so why do you want to change? And, I think I paid my dues here and I got to leverage my gifts and talents and this kind of thing. I need to, you know, I really need to be a good steward of my brand and all, and, you know, all the little buzz things he was saying. And I'm saying, oh, give me a break here, you know. So,
and the trump card is the Lord's leading me. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that sort of shuts down the arguments.
Absolutely.
And so I said to him, and he said, well, I want to do what you do and some of the other people do, you know, the platform that you have, and I want to write in this kind of thing. I said, you know, no doubt you can do that. You've got gifts, talents, and abilities. You've got charisma. I mean, you can preach the birds out the tree and all this stuff. But you know what? God's never going to give you what you want because you won't stick around long enough to get what you need.
Mm.
You got to finish, son. You got to stop running. You've got to lead with the stuff that you're talking about. Mm. See, the difference between beliefs and convictions is endurance. Okay. It's testing. It's when your beliefs are challenged and you stay there and fight through it and you edit it out. That's when it becomes visceral. That's when it grabs your soul.
Yes. Yeah.
And all we have right now is, we've got a whole generation of people who are confusing exposure with experience. You know, because they can Google it or they, you know, they read the blog or they attended a conference or they, you know, they hear these podcasts or the tsunami of information gives them
because they have 10,000 followers. They must be effective, right?
Exactly. It gives them a false sense of stability, a false sense of maturity.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the only thing that's gonna give you what you need is when God steps back and lets you experience some hard times and some suffering And so you just have to learn how to stick around long enough to stick, buddy. Yeah. And that's when you become worth following. That's when you become a dad. That's when you become a husband that keeps his promises, because you know what is real. You've been there, and God has kept you.
How did that man receive that?
What's that?
How did that man receive that?
Not well. He just, I mean, pride wears many disguises, and the chief of them is self-deception, man. I mean, he's just gonna get fully full of yourself. You wanted me to tell, my dad. My dad, I'm the youngest and the only boy, okay? And so I had two things working. And it's true. I could play my mother like a Stradivarius, okay? I could sort of whine a little bit and this kind of thing, and
My baby boy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So but my father, not so much. I mean, he was a little old school, right? So they had this rental property. I was like 13 years old. And this was the most, I tell you, in terms of manhood, this was the most significant transferable encounter I had in my life.
Okay.
I was about 13 years old, and my dad had said earlier in the week, okay, we're going over here. The tenant had moved out. We're going over here. We got all of us going to work Saturday, and boy, you're going to help me paint. I was already figuring out how I was going to get out of this thing. And, so we get there Saturday, and I'm up there painting with Pop. Well, my mother and my sisters are downstairs doing something else. And so I said, Pop, I got to go to the bathroom. And so I went downstairs ostensibly to go to the bathroom. I said to my mother, Mom, Pop's making me paint upstairs, and all my friends are playing, and I've been working hard. 12, 13 years old, working hard. And, I want to go to the park and this kind of thing. Well, my father came down. I must have been down there too long. And when he walked in, he says, well, what's this? And my mother turned around and said to him, I'm a junior, Crawford, that boy doesn't need to be up there. This is Saturday. He needs to be out there with his friends, this kind of thing. And my father said, Sylvia, I've got this. And I'll never forget this. He said, he looked at me and said, Sylvia, that boy, and pointed at me, is going to be somebody's husband and somebody's father one day. And he needs to learn how to do what he doesn't want to do in order to show up. And then he said to me, son, and this is, you knew he was ticked when he said this, you get your hind parts upstairs and you paint until I tell you to stop. And to my mother's credit, because she sensed what was going on, this was an important shift. To my mother's credit, she just backed away, turned around, and I was in his hands. And so what he was doing was very significant. See, manhood is imprinted.
Yes.
Every 28 days, a woman is powerfully and graphically and visibly reminded of who she is.
That's right.
But I don't think this is an overstatement to say this. A man only knows he's a man when his father or significant male role model tells him so.
Yeah.
And what my dad was doing is he was pulling me out of impulse behavior. He was pulling me out of impulse behavior. He said, son, sorry, it stops now.
It's good.
It stops. And I actually think the most significant time in a boy's life is between 11 and 15. Okay. It's at that point where that kid needs to begin to smell, get so close to his dad, he smells his deodorant, man.
Yeah.
Because he needs to be imprinted.
Yeah.
Now you say, well, I didn't have that. Well, you're breathing, you can get it.
That's right.
You can get it. There are dudes out there that would, they're old dudes like me who are retired and this kind of thing. Pull those suckers off the golf course and say, hey, look, will you have breakfast with me? And I need to get some things from you. So,
I think your son, Brian, calls them mentors and patriarchs.
Yeah.
I love that language. Not old people. We got enough old people. We need mentors and patriarchs, right?
I'm
getting ready to go back to Africa next week, unless the Ebola thing cuts it down. But one of my favorite places in the world is Kenya. And I've lived for extended times with the Maasai who understand initiation. And it's like you were just like singing my song, like a woman's body tells her, right? Yeah. There's a cost to life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There's a cost to it. But a boy there's not. And so that's, it's interesting is that, I think there's an initiation or a Maasai saying something like, unless a boy is taught to be a man, he'll burn the village down trying to figure it out. Something to that effect. Right. And he has to leave the company of women. Right. Yeah. And then he's put in a cohort of men and they tell him who he is. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then the circumcision is the cost of life is blood.
Yes.
And pain and suffering. Same way with the Dinka and is that they sit there and they cut lines in their forehead as boys and they can't flinch. And the whole idea is if you can face the pain now, then when we get attacked or the hyenas come or the soldiers come, you won't run. But if you flinch, they tell you you can't have a wife because you can't be trusted. Yeah. And I'm like, so in our world though, today, this is my jam right here, right? There is no initiation.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
I reached a level 14 of World of Warcraft and like, oh, good for you. You know, or like what could we as mentors and patriarchs, like how can we maybe begin to create passage rites of, my friend John Tyson's really he's a new friend. And he's like these rites of initiations, like how can we as the kingdom, as the body of Christ, come together and begin to form rites of initiation. Do you think it's possible?
Yeah, I do. I think it's possible. One of the reasons why manhood is so swampish now is because we have not clarified expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And what rites of passage, what they do is clarify expectations.
Yes, right.
And you know, we did this with our boys, and I'm doing it now with my grandsons. But particularly, I'll take our grandsons. When they turn 13 years old, one of the things I do, I give them the Bible that I have preached through and read through. It ain't an iPad. I give them a Bible. Paper.
Come on. Come on.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Then, of course, we give them the family crest there, which shows the three core value, big rock things that we're all about as Laritz family. And then we, their dad and my uncles, whether Brian or Brendan, my other sons, and then two other guys that mean an awful lot to them, we speak into their lives and clarify expectations, what manhood means, and benchmark them and tell them that we are with them and give them a sense of a context that you're not by yourself. And I think this is what's missing in our culture and society today. There cannot be confidence in the future unless there's clarity about my identity.
Yeah.
They're inextricably tied together.
That's right.
If I don't know who I am, and this is true with organizations and entities and churches and this kind of thing, I tell people all the time, mission statements are wonderful for an organization. What's more important are identity statements, because they drive everything, and that culture gives targeted focus to your mission. Yes. You got to know who you are, because that's the stuff of endurance. And understanding that degree of clarity that you're not by yourself, and that I am held accountable and responsible for my choices and behavior, gives powerful force to your life and your direction. It also protects you, right? It also says, if I screw up, if I mess up, and I will, if there are people who know me and love me, who will come alongside of me, they'll give me what I need, but they help me to get back to where I need to be.
That's good.
And that's why these wonderful rituals are important.
Yeah.
And I actually think, and I know I'm sounding sexist here, and my wife does things with our granddaughters and this kind of thing, but if you would push me, I would say from a directional perspective, it is more important that guys do it. More important.
Yeah.
Because we represent the visible portrait of the desired destination.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we're starting with.
I'm trying to put myself in your 13-year-old grandson's shoes. Okay. So can, if you can remember, like, just, or kind of go back and tell us who you told your grandson he was and what he can count on. Like, can you remember the words around that? Because it just sounds like, I bet if I found him, he could tell me, you know?
Yeah. But yeah.
Like what you looked him in the eye, which is, you don't look boys in the eye, or boys don't look men in the eye. Men look men in the eye, right?
Yep.
So look me in the eye. Now, listen, I'm going to tell you something. Give me an example of what you told him.
I tell him where he came from. And they all know the stories now. But I go back to Peter and I talk about, you know, that's their great, great grandfather now, I guess it would be. Great, great, great grandfather. Yeah. That's and I tell them about their great, great grandfather, Milton, and about their great grandfather, my dad, and I, and about me and my journey and all of this. Then I point to what's been important, what's lasting, then celebrate who they are, that God's given them gifts and abilities, and that God's given them a stewardship, that they can't waste this.
Mm.
This is something that's been placed in your hands. And it's not something to hold you back. It's something that will propel you forward, and that you need to do the same thing. And then they're, you know, then it's individualized because they're different. You know, there are things that we've seen by then in their lives that we observe and help them with. A huge dosages of positive affirmation, letting them know that they're gonna have challenges. They're stepping into and well, they've already faced this. I mean, every year adolescence gets younger and younger, but the temptations that are there and the realities that they will face, and that they're not weird that they're going through all of this, and then have various other people speak into their lives about temptations, about disciplines that they need to embrace, and what's important, and then have them annually give these folks here that's here all the way through their teen years. Mm-hmm. Give us their goals for every single year, their dreams, great. And that we're praying for them, and that we're here to resource them, and that we love them. And then we all call them, you know, at least once a month to say, hey, look, what's going on, man? And so it's that degree of that's what we do, you know. And again, it's. We don't cut lines in their heads, and you know that we don't.
They'll put you in jail for that. Yeah. So those are. So I was talking to a dad today, who's raising a stepson. So it's a blended family, mm-hmm. and his stepson was raised by women.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is a big guy. I mean, he's like a defense contractor, big guy, right? Now he has a stepson who's all words because he's been raised by women. It's all words. He's this big dude. He's like, I want to see action. You know, he's like, don't tell me you're sorry. Show me you're sorry. And so there's the action steps. So I have another good friend. He ran Navy SEAL Buds for 3 years. Right. And he had a term called random acts of violence. I'll explain what that means is they would set their men up for, even if they did everything right, they would set them up to say, sorry, it's not good enough. And their response would be, that's not fair. It's like, absolutely. How are you going to deal with not fair? Right. Yeah, and so how I what I see right now is a generation of all I want my kids to be is happy, and I want them to be easy. All right. I want them to have it better than me. And so like, but integrity and toughness is forged in crucibles, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So all these words, the beautiful words that you just give, then how do you put them in planned, intentional hardship?
Well,
does that make sense? I mean, the painting would be an example. That'd be a light example.
Right. I would say though that we need to back up a little bit here and understand that God is the one that will bring to them everything that they need, and that we don't necessarily have to orchestrate that, but we have to help them on how to respond to it. Okay. You know, so everybody's different, and not one size fits all, you know, And so we just have to, so we stand back a little bit and tell them that, hey, look, you know, God has a plan for your life. And you have different personalities, by the way. I don't think that, you know, just because a guy is artistic or sensitive and that kind of thing, hey, that's not being less male. You know, I've got some grandsons who are artistic and creative and that kind of thing. That doesn't mean that they're weak. That just means that they've got a personality that, you know, that's who they are. And so I don't think it's trying to make, there's this vision of manhood that, you know, you gotta, I mean, if you're not going out shooting clay pigeons three times a week and, you know, if your favorite thing to do on vacation is live in the wilderness for 60 days or whatever, I mean, come on, man, that's not that, some guys will do that. So, you know, letting them be who they are, but understanding that every man sooner or later, toughness is not a personality type. You're going to have to face some hard things, and you're going to have to show up, and you can't run. And I think it's those things, and then allowing, stepping back and allowing them to have their own experiences, giving them the gift of consequences, not bailing them out when things get hard, letting them figure it all out. That's what I think it's all about.
We're back.
Okay. The joys of technology, man.
Is it recording already?
Yes, it's still recording.
You were on a tear, and I'm like, no, gold is about to flow. We got the tear. Well, bring me up. So you where I lost contact was, you said what we have to understand is that God will bring us what we need.
Yeah, yeah. And basically what I was saying is that we got to be careful that we're not – this is where the whole parenting thing – parenting your children does not mean that you permanently control your children.
Right.
You know, that doesn't mean that at all. And it doesn't mean that they become like you. You know, I've said when I was pastoring, the church thought I was crazy. But I would say to them – the goal of parenting is simple, very, very simple. You place their hand in Jesus, and then you point them toward the door. That's it.
What? I get it.
That's basic. No, there's a lot of stuff going in there, but you're helping them to become independently dependent upon God, which means that just because you can doesn't mean that you should.
That's right.
That you're committed to developing them, and you realize that you're going to be very dead one day. Mm-hmm. And so you got to be careful of creating hyper-dependent children, right? You know? Yeah. And so as soon as they can, they make their own choices. They make their own decisions. But you help them to embrace personal responsibility.
Right.
That's a big deal, man. And I think nobody in this culture wants to be responsible for anything.
Right. So you've made a statement like if you started something, your dad made sure you finished it from a ball medium to painting. Yeah. Into it, right. And
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. He was a little over the top almost about that. I mean, you know, he would say things to me. I'll never forget this. He would say to me, son, all you have at the end of the day is what you say. That's all you got. That's all you got. I mean, you can kind of like shovel it deep and wide and kind of like, you know, all these great intentions and stuff. But really, the thing that's going to make a difference is that you did what you said.
Right.
You did what you said. And that, you know, if you show up, if you have a job and the man is expecting you to show up, you show up and you work, period. You don't cry about it, this kind of thing. You finish what you start. Right. I mean, he wouldn't let me even quit part-time jobs. I better have a good reason for it. It's my job. You know, so
that's good.
But that was the same thing with our kids. And, you know, I used to tell our kids all the time, especially our sons, that, hey, look, if you play, you stay, buddy.
Right.
You play, you stay. I don't want to hear how hard it is. I don't want to hear any belly aching about, you know, I'm not getting the playing time that I need and this kind of thing. No, you see it through.
That's good.
You see it through. And Of course. I mean, obviously, you know, there's circumstances. You don't want anybody being taken advantage of and that kind of thing. But that's important.
Yeah.
You know, it's important. You learn how to finish the endurance ride. You learn that life is not about you. You learn that fulfillment is not always doing what I want to do. But profound fulfillment comes from doing what I ought to do.
Yeah.
That's where the profound fulfillment comes.
Right.
And if you always just keep changing the environment, you know, you're institutionalizing immaturity.
Yeah. And your father modeled that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because
oh, yeah.
I love it. Like masculinity and character is imprinted. Right. You can't outsource it. Right. And so we have to be models of that. Like if you remember your dad doing hard things because he ought to, like, what are some of those things that you look back going, I'll give an example. My dad showed up. My dad pointed to. Right.
Yeah. 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 Well, you know, I think family was everything to him. And one of the things I mentioned this in my book I write about, you know, his impact on my life. One of my earliest memories, I was probably 5 or 6 years old. But I remember this line for some reason. I was in the room when he and mom was talking about him working overtime. And you know, he had worked an awful lot, and family was everything to my father. And so it was around the holidays, and as I got older, I found out he was going to be paid triple time if he had worked. And he said he used this line. I'll never forget it. I was like maybe 6 years old. He said to my mother, he said, "Sylvia, yeah, but if I worked, I've been away from these kids an awful lot." He worked at nights and this kind of thing. I've been away from these kids an awful lot. And if I worked, that would be blood money. That would be blood money. And for whatever reason, what he meant by that was that, yeah, I could do that, but it would take me away from what's really most important. And I'd rather not get a few extra things and give them me.
Yeah.
Than to be away from them. And I couldn't articulate it, but the amazing value that I felt to him just as a kid.
Yeah.
And so it was those sacrifices. I mean, he would finagle his schedule around. I played a little baseball, I was a little kid and stuff. He would finagle his schedule around. He worked nights just so that he could be there.
Yeah.
At my ball games. And, you know, it was just amazing. He was always there.
That's good.
Always there.
I think what you just said, something really interesting, is like, I couldn't articulate it, but it imprinted on me as a 6 year old. And I think that, that with a lot of us as men or fathers, husbands, we're looking for these big banner moments as opposed to just over and over and over and over. So I'll give you an example around here. So when they first hired me here years ago, the elders were interviewing me and they said, "So you say turn in your Bible a lot." When I was in the interview process, I went, "Yeah." And they went, "Well, a lot of people really don't have Bibles." Okay. "Well, we'll take care of that." Okay. But then over time, you know, people started looking at the big screens and it's like, why carry a Bible? And you know, it's up there. And so a few months ago we started, I said, "We're going to go word by word through the book of First Peter." So it's a book about hope and our living hope. Yeah, yeah. And we're going to slow way, way, way down. And I said, if we want to become like the people of God, then we have to know the word of God. In order to the word of God, you got to read the word of God. And if you're going to read it, you got to own one. And then I held up this 10-pound ESV study Bible. And I said, this is the one that I'm going to be reading out of and studying out of. I got it on Amazon. And we shut down Amazon at the 9 o'clock service. Shut it down. Okay. I flew an intern to Chicago. They bought out that warehouse and drove him back. And then just right. So, but here's my favorite part of Sunday right now. It's not just the preaching and teaching. And I actually hear pages turning. We're going old school retro church, like turn in your Bibles and write in the margin. I prayed about it. God's fine with it, man. You know? But here's my favorite part of Sundays now, right? I'm stuck in traffic on my way home for lunch, and I see a young dad with like three little ducklings behind him, and he's got that big Bible under his arm, right?
Yeah.
That's a win.
Yes.
I remember. I remember walking back from church to our car, and my dad had that big Bible, shiny gold on the side still. Yep. So, I mean, it still smells like new leather. It's like, I think it's those little moments of repetition. Muscle memory, right?
Yeah, but see, Jim, what you're saying is that's leadership. You know, leadership is not just a top box on the org chart. It's not the guy that gets the bigger office that the bathroom in it. And, you know, it's not the nice green room that we all hang out in. Yeah, that's leadership. Leadership pays the price.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you lead. This sounds crazy, but whatever you lead is meant to be a reflection of who you are. Leadership at its core is incarnational.
Yeah. Well, I mean, good or bad, that's going to be true, right?
For good or bad, that's it. I mean, every organization is an extension of its leadership. I served on the board of Chick-fil-A, for example, and you know, you go into any Chick-fil-A anywhere across the country, and you know, the extra mile service, my pleasure, where good meets gracious and all of this stuff. Well, you know, the funny thing is, if you knew Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, you go, well, of course.
That was him.
That's who he was.
Yep.
That's just who he was. And, you know, if you want someone to bleed, then you have to hemorrhage. It's just as simple as that. I mean, that's the price that you have to pay. But what you did, I mean, but see, that's the same thing with parenting, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's the same thing with I've got to be what I want them to become. Mm-hmm. I've got to be what I want my great, 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 great grandkids.
Wow.
To become. I got to be that because my moment in history is just a continuum.
Yeah.
It's just a continuum.
And it's short.
And every moment in history is short, man.
Yeah.
It's like one dot lies between two vast eternities.
It's good.
And so I've got to pour myself into that moment, and I've got to live it with urgency. I've got to live it with great intentionality. And it doesn't mean that I'm perfect, but I've got to be transparent. I've got to work on my stuff. I can't be lazy about it. And so they capture that.
Yeah.
Sure
do.
Yeah.
Well, you have me at Chick-fil-A. I have 89,000 points on my app. So I have built a wing on some Cathy house somewhere. But anyway, I could pull it up right here until like, he really has 89,000 points. But I've eaten there twice today, I think. So, hey, I got to watch time. And thank you so much, first of all. This may be related or unrelated. It may not be a new one, but what is kind of an aha moment or what is a learning that God is impressing on your heart? It may have to do with this. It may have to do with leadership. It may have to do with, you know, what's happening around us, but like what has God put a burden on your heart around and where do you think that might take you or where do you sense it's taking you?
Oh man, I think I would answer that two ways. I think the older I get, the less complicated I am.
Okay.
It all gets back to everything in my life is a reflection of my healthy or poor relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's all about communion with him. I said this with our mutual friend, Andy Stanley. This is where it fits. It fits in the second. What I'm terribly concerned about in terms of how we do Christianity and what we've been through the last 4 or 5 years and the hellacious divisiveness that we've experienced man, is that our Christianity has become a point of reference and not the context of our lives. That's good. And where we use it in an a la carte way to leverage what we want, to get what we want, and we've bought into a limited culture war theology that is not comprehensive enough. And so I think what we need to do is to continue to scrape the barnacles off our Christianity and offer to the world, not a hybrid of, quote, cultural Christian opinions, but the simple beauty and clarity that Jesus died on the cross in my place and for my sin. And on the third day, he arose from the dead. He ascended to the Father. And that's what we're offering to the world. Right. And I think we need to get back to being that gospel clarity and communicating that gospel clarity.
I agree. I was teaching through 1 Peter, and he goes, but you are a chosen nation, you're a chosen race. Yeah. You're a nation. And I said, there's all the answers. Like, okay, what race are you? Chosen? That's my race. Right? Now, after that, we can get into some other things, but right, what family are you? Family of God, right? What nation are you? Well, I live in America, but I'm part of the kingdom, you know?
Yes.
My loyalty is to Christ, not politics. And and like, you just feel everybody like going, well, that would simplify life, wouldn't it? You know?
Yeah, but that's the way it's supposed to be, man. Man, I'm so glad you're preaching on 1 Peter. I mean, I think that book is a prophetic book for the church at this point in history.
Yep.
Because he's speaking in principle to all, in principle, I mean, of course, the trappings are different, but in principle to all the other stuff that we're walking through right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great, great
stuff. Yeah. Honor the emperor. Yeah. And the emperor thinks he's God is going to like set us on fire in 40 years. Yeah, that one. So, you know, stop whining. We're okay. You know?
Absolutely.
So, Dr. Lewis, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I would love to do this again. I would love to bring you out to Colorado and just have all my men sit at your feet and just listen. But you've already made an impact on my life and millions of the church. All right. Your legacy is phenomenal. So I'm just honored that you could find time to do this.
Well, my wife and I love Colorado, and you know, I pray over every invitation, but I wouldn't pray as long over that one. Okay.
Listen, I have a cabin in the mountains with a rocking chair with your name on it. Let's go.
Oh my goodness.
Let's go.
There you go, buddy.
All right. Hey, thanks.
Everybody has a price, and you just named mine.
All right.
So
sold. All right. All right. Bye-bye.